Blog Talk Radio.
Second show, and I just would say, and I really appreciate all the work and everything that you guys did and send out those kind words to me. Before we get started with our guests, I need to go over some announcements and everything. We're just trying to promote just everything that we do here and try to get everybody involved in the Wingland. I like to call everybody who runs a wing a winger. So let me go through some announcements right here. The first thing I want to announce is the National Single Wing Coach Association Clinic, which is going to be in Dumfries, Virginia. I talked about this last week, and we talked extensively about this last week. You know, we can't look at going to these functions as expense. It's an investment into you. It's an investment for your kids. And, you know, and where can you go to get all this wisdom and get all the help that you need? Our clinics are a little bit different than the other clinics around, whereas we have hands-on with people who are actually doing it. And the next one coming up is going to be this June, June 26th through 28th in Dumfries, Virginia, which is about 30 miles south of D.C. And the speakers there are going to be Travis Connors from North Carolina, Derek Minor, Mickey Thompson, Sean Orr, Corey Parker. Then we have a couple of the legends speaking on a panel, Ed Raceley and George Rykovic. And God, you know, for all this knowledge and everything, all it costs you is $25 and a hotel room. You know, and if you can't afford the hotel room, then buddy up with some of your people so they can go. Head coaches, if you want to bring your staff and everything, it's only $50 for the entire staff. So it's very cost effective. And you get a chance, you know, to get together, you know, one last time for the summer before you get back into the barrels of things. The next one is the conclave that's held in Wilkes-Barre. I never could pronounce. I don't know the right pronunciation of that word. I call it Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And the conclave is going to be March 6th and 7th. And I bring all these up now because we want you to start preparing for it right now. This is the granddaddy of the wing clinics, whatever, the conclave. And Todd Bross does a very good job of organizing and getting it done. He does a great job with it. And those dates are March 6th and 7th, 2015. We also got the Double Wing Symposium, which is held in New Orleans every year. And I talked to J.J. Lawson earlier this weekend. He's working on dates and everything for that. So as soon as he let me know those dates, I will get it to you, and we can start planning to attend these things. Guys, is the camaraderie there, the things that you learn, and everything is just awesome. And the things these guys do to get ready for you. You know, it's all right to get the tapes and the videos and all that stuff, but it's nothing like that human touch and just to sit and talk to somebody in the face, you know. The other thing, any suggestions of coaches who are wingers, you know, I like to call them wingers, you would like to see on our show, you know, drop me an email and let me know. You know, we'll do the research and then we'll get them on. And, again, all we want to do is expose everybody to all kind of facets of the wings and everything. Who knows what's out there that can help you. And you can email me at chang40@gmail.com. That's chang40@gmail.com, and we'll take it from there. If you get an special award, like, you know, like you got Coach of the Year or something like that, or if your kid get a special award or something like that, get it to me so we can spread this news. One of the knocks against us is that what we do, it doesn't prepare our kids for college, but we know that's hogwash. Christ, I got about 25, 26 kids in school off of one stupid play. And, you know, and if they can play, the people will find them. But let me know if they get scholarships so we can start spreading the word and stop this nonsense that's out there that kids don't get scholarships or going to do good things in life because we do what we do. And, excuse me. And if you got kids who are doing something special, like, you know, a scholarship or anything, let me know so we can give them a shout-out on here. And so we can start beating our chests about our success. Tonight, we have with us one of my buddies, one of my mentors, one of my heroes in this business, Harold Strauss. I met Harold, I can't remember when I met Harold. All I know is I met him and my life changed. He did some things, and especially with Dr. Ward. And when you meet with great people you do, you start to do great things. You emulate what these people do, you know, and you start, great things start happening for you. And I saw what he was doing. I fell in love with it. I bugged him. He was so gracious to help me along the way. I don't know if I bugged him enough, but I bugged him. And all the success that we've had in the past, I know I give it to people who I ask questions for, and they graciously help me. Let me see if I can get Harold online here. Let's see if he's there. Harold?
How are you, my brother? Happy Easter.
Hey, what's going on? Happy Easter to you, man. How's everything going?
Hey, absolutely great. You know what? Other than getting older, brother.
I know. Let me tell you something about Harold, guys. First of all, let me tell you this. I have met Harold's wife, and let me tell you that, you know, the old term we use when a dude marries up, Harold definitely married up.
Amen to that, man.
Yes, sir. He would agree to that in the New York State. How's she doing?
She's doing outstanding. Thank you for asking. She's doing outstanding.
Okay. That's
her
great.
And the grandkids. Got a lot of 8 grandkids now.
Right.
We just had another one last week. So,
man, that was that bundle of joy I saw you throwing in the air, huh?
Yes, that's it.
That is fantastic, man. How are things with you? And I know the working relationship in your with you and your athletic director is kind of tedious at sometimes, don't you? Isn't it?
it's pretty tough when you're working for your daughter. Yeah, you know, it's funny, Leonard. The last time you saw Tiffany, she was out there at one of the symposiums with us. Remember? And
I remember.
One of the coaches asked her to go outside the room because he wanted to say, oh, it was something like, damn, or something. And she left the room, and then we brought her back in. But, yeah, she went on to be my trainer for 10 years, and then now she's the first woman trainer, our woman AD in our district in over 100 years. And I had the opportunity last 2 years to work underneath her. So I've only banged her desk a couple times, but other than that, I try and be pretty soft.
No, remember now, you still have to go home to mama, okay? And mama,
that's right.
And mama's not going to put up with that.
That's
okay,
right.
So, so you got to be nice. You got to be nice to daughter, okay?
Yeah.
And and I read something. I was going through something and going through your background and everything, and you got a son-in-law who's also a coach also.
Yeah, it's Tiffany's husband. He's like 6'7", basketball player, but he basketball coach. And last year he took the Colton basketball. They hadn't won a championship in 43 years, and they went undefeated for the first time in 43 years and won a league championship. So, and that was in his first year head coaching. So I'm pretty excited for him. You know, I told him don't be putting so much pressure on me like that. So. But he did good. He had a great, coach of the year, and it was awesome for the family. It was a neat deal. So it's been a good year.
You didn't tell him that was part of the deal that he became coach of the year. Coming to the family, did you?
No, as long as he keeps having these giant babies, I'm in great shape.
Okay.
Producing some quarterbacks, I told him.
Okay, that is fantastic, Harold. Man, I'm so happy for it. Now, how many grands does that make now?
8. Yeah, had another little girl. We had 6 boys. We only had 1 girl up to this point. We had another little girl, my son, out in Kansas. He's in the Army and doing well. And anyway, it's nice. Those grandkids are fun.
I know they are, man. Yeah, well, God bless you. You're gonna enjoy them a lot, I tell you. You know what? I was going through all everything. You know what impressed me more about you, Harold, than the X's and O's and anything? What you do in that community out there. You know, I was going through your resume and everything, and some of the things that you do out there. Could you explain to me what you do in that community? I know what it is, but, you know, give it out there to the guys out there.
You know, we've been a big, and I just believe in building the person. You know, you and I have sat down and talked ages and ages and time after time, but I'm a real big, you got to have your ducks in a row. It kind of sums it up, but we have these 5 B's that we go through, and we have to teach it to our kids right from the very beginning. It's just be the best person you can be and be the best student-athlete you can be the best family member you can be, and then be the best community member that you can be. And what we do is we get them out. The first thing we did was start with our police and fire departments, and we hooked up, and they kept coming to our practices, and we made them part of the practice. You know, when we first got to Colton, you could probably relate to this, but our kids would take off running when they saw the car pull up, you know. And but after we got them in and play, they'd come in practice and just have a good time with our kids. Well, they cite a lot of elderly people and people with that are sick, and especially the elderly, though, that can't pay their citation. There's no way they can pay their citation, but there's also no way they can clean up their facilities and their homes. And so what we would do is they would talk to us, and we would go in and spend a day or two, and, man, we'd just take a group of about 50 to 60 kids with mowers and oh gosh, rakes and shovels. And I can remember one time we cleared about an acre of bamboo besides everything else and uncovered a patio that they didn't know was there. It was like an inch and a half deep under dirt, and it was a back patio, and painted. And we've done just, if you can think of it, we've done it, you know, to planting trees. I think we planted about 300 trees one time in Grand Terrace for an Eagle project. But anything they can challenge us with, we just did a, I don't know if you saw on Facebook because it's just fresh. This last weekend we fed 25,000 meals to starving children over in the third world. We packaged, raised the money and packaged the food. So, you know, it just stuff like that, it just comes back in the end, and I think it's made our kids better people. And I think that's what we're about, is helping. It really goes back with building character into your kids, along with the other things that we talk about all the time. But I believe that's why we've been successful, and hopefully we build better people.
Well, I've seen you. I've seen your kids in action and everything, and you know, off the field, and of course, we lose some along the way, you know, because we can't get everybody and everything. But boy, those guys who has really hung in there with you have become. I know have become better. Have become better men, and they come back, and the best thing they can do is teach their kids how to be better men and better women also. I was going through your resume, and golly, how you coached a lot of sports.
I'm old, brother. I wasn't very smart when I was young. I just grew up loving athletics. And I tell you what, I was lucky enough that somebody believed in me when I was only 20 years old. I was coaching 19-year-olds, and on the CIF, which is out here like your state association, I was sitting on advisory committees with the guys that had their masters and had been coaching legends, you know, and I would sit there beside them thinking, what am I doing here, you know? but you know what? We grabbed a philosophy, and I had some mentors, just like you'd been talking about last week with Dr. Ward and on your show, and the winning started taking care of itself right away, and it was interesting. I was able to get a lot of the awards out of the way and not focus on that as a young coach, and just they became second nature. It was more focus on the kids and what we could do as a group if we could get them to do the right things. And kind of fell into place. You know, God's been good over my coaching career.
So you think that what I was getting at, you know, we got a lot of young guys today who think that, well, I'm just a football coach and I don't do anything else and everything. How did coaching all the sport help you develop into, in my opinion, the great coach you are right now?
Oh, you know, I believe it's huge. Number one, I think you're right. I was listening last week when Doc Ward was even talking about it. A lot of coaches don't believe in sharing kids, and I think that gets them into trouble. I think kids need to experience everything they can when they're in high school. You only go to high school once, and I think that's a huge thing. So, you know, I guess I was kind of the same thing. I was young and played about everything. You know, I wrestled and played some baseball and played football and when I was in high school and got in. But I ended up coaching football. Then I go right to wrestling, and I did wrestling for like 16 years. And then I did baseball for about 11 years. My daughters got old enough to be high school softball players. They absolutely talked me into coaching them, so that was a treat. And I don't know if it's such a treat for them, but it was a treat for me. And we had a blast and did real well. And, you know, we were lucky enough, like you said, to knock some teams off that people never thought. But I think it made me close to and I enjoyed coaching, going, moving over, especially was a great move for me as a football coach. And there's a legend out here, Dick Brewick. he used to coach football and girls softball, and I thought, what a great combination, because if you haven't coached girls, it's a whole different ball of wax, man. Guys let it go. Girls don't let it go, you know. And but I tell you, they're competitive, and I had a lot of fun coaching both girls and boys. But I tell you what it did. It opened the door on campus and off campus for me to relate to kids on campus that went to schools that I went to and their friends. And you wouldn't know how many nights at 3 o'clock in the morning, Leonard, I got called out from one of the kids. I've always been one of those coaches. Here's my number. You ever get in trouble? You ever get in need? And, you know, working with the police, they always kind of looked out for me. I got calls in the middle of the night, you know, and they'd say, hey, I got so-and-so. He's messing around. Nothing bad, you know what, but he was messing around in the park. And I say, put him in cuffs and scare him and then let him go. Or call me and I'll come, you know, just depending on the situation. But you know what? The more you put yourself and involve yourself in the community and in your school community population, I believe it opens the doors for you to be more successful with your kids and for your kids to be more successful, because I think it builds a huge trust between you and with the faculty. You know what? When the faculty see you involved in a ton of things, I've never had a problem with faculty wanting to come out and get involved in what we're doing and make that special. They want to see the same kind of thing. They want to be involved too then.
Yeah, I'm having this is my first year at Marion High School, and I'm having to fight over my body. Coach, you're going to be at my softball game. Coach, you're going to be at the baseball game. Coach, we're shooting marble over here. We're going to be over here. And
yep,
you find yourself cutting yourself in half, dashing from one place to the other to get there, but it's worth it in the long run to build that relationship. You got to have, you know, it's all about relationship. It's always been that way. And if you can get the relationship between your kids and your faculty and everything, it'll make it a lot easier for you. I truly believe that.
Yeah. You know, Leonard,
I was going to
touch base just a second on something you brought up earlier, you know, because I heard the same thing over and over for years and years about you can't run the single wing, you can't run the double wing and put your kids. And I just wanted to remind everybody that we've got five guys in the NFL today, and we were the number one high school about four years ago. Put three kids in on the same draft, and then we've got two more coming in this year in the draft, and maybe a kicker as well, so maybe possibly three more, and then two more behind them. So when people say that, you know, tooting the horn of the wing, it's kind of fun to toot the horn of the wing. You know what? Just come tell me that again, and we'll just put it out there. We got our first Super Bowl ring, too. You know, Jimmy Smith ended up winning the Super Bowl last year with Baltimore, so... You knew all those kids. You got a chance to meet them and see them. And so it was great for single-wing football and people that said, hey, they're never going to go on anywhere from there.
You know, I remember, what's it, Bradford? And,
yeah.
And what's the other little tailback?
Sharice Wright.
Number
Sharice
seven.
Wright.
Yeah,
right,
man.
Right
I
down at
kids all the time, man.
Down with the Chargers and our quarterbacks with the Chargers now. And we just, one of them got waived. Our big defensive end got waived down out of Denver, but... Man, we've got kids that we would have never thought would have made it. But our safety, he's coming out of BYU this year, was their starting safety for 4 years. And then we had the player of the year at San Diego State. And they're both projected in the draft in later rounds. So so we're excited for them. And those were just kids that you would have, you know, people say that, well, those kids are going to make it. It's kids sometimes that wouldn't have made it. You know, I think the difference is what we talked about earlier. And I think their parents believe it 100%, because when they come back, the neatest thing is to watch these kids in their off season come back and talk to the middle school kids, talk to everybody, come by the house for dinner, take you out to dinner. You know, it's just it's all stuck. But they probably – Colton didn't win for 20 years before we got to Colton. And you know what? Those kids were all there. They should have had, you know, kids in the pros, a ton of kids in the pros. But it's all about the person. It's about getting grades. It's about all the things you got to do to get there. And I think that's a key point that you make, you know, those people, these kids, it's amazing what they can do when they get their heads on, you know. It's just, they always tell me kids have changed. I say, no, kids haven't changed. Society's changed, man. We just got to figure it out.
Got to get it figured out, you know. We got to open up a little bit to see where they are so that we can reach them where they are sometime.
Amen. You betcha.
You did something at one of the I can't remember, was a conclave or the symposium, but it blew me away. You had one of your coaches or one of your academic guys came up and explained us how you did your academic program. Could you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, you betcha. That's been a great one. We've actually presented that all over the country. In fact, they just got back. My daughter and him just got back. Same, Steve Barton. Absolutely great.
Yeah,
guy.
Steve.
And you remember Steve,
yeah.
And presented. Well, mm-hmm. They just got back from USC at NCAA conference that they were putting on to explain all the new rules. And he's still doing it. You know, him and Kirk McVay are two guys that started with me at Colton. They came over to Grand Terrace with me. And they track all of our kids. We have they track our kids weekly and give their time. It's not a paid position either. They have just dedicated to see these kids through. And what they do is they do grade checks on every football player on every level weekly. Figure it up. Anybody without a C has to go to mandatory tutoring. They went out and chased the teachers down and got the teachers involved. We originally had like two or three. We gave a few pat on the backs with shirts and a few plaques, and pretty soon it was 27 teachers involved. And so they involved and opened their rooms to tutoring before school, after school, during lunch, anytime they were free. And what we did was we worked with the NCAA real close. They called Nebraska. We, especially Nebraska, has been really good to us about sending us their spreadsheets that basically explain where they're at, right by to the class and what their core GPA is. So at any time a coach comes in, we can actually hand them a portfolio that tells them right where they're at with the NCAA standards. And but also, you know, they talk to the teachers about the character in the class. If they get a mark that they've been in trouble or they've been a problem in the class, we're able to get right on it. I can't tell you how valuable he is. You know, obviously you and I both know how that would be. But the time it takes away from me as a head coach, he just shoots me the messages, you know, or if I get a note from a teacher, I send it to him, and he goes and checks on it. But he keeps track of that all 4 years and makes sure our kids are on track. And we went from, I'll give you an idea, we went from when I got to Colton, 10% of the kids, so that was like 1 out of 100, would go to college in the fall. And the next year it was like 73%. We started this tutoring program, and then it was anywhere from between 93 and 100% of our kids went and tried college in the fall. And most of those all were NCAA qualified. So, and that's why we have five guys in the pros right now. To this day, Sharice and Alan, they would tell you, they don't know if they would have made it, you know, if it wasn't for the tutoring program. And when they got to USC and played at USC, we went down there and we spent a day with their tutoring program down there. And they said those two kids were the stars of their tutoring program. And they knew how to work when they got there. And I think that's a huge factor that as coaches we have to realize. We're not just football coaches. Part of football coaching is preparing these kids for the next level. They say the number one thing for kids when they come in is to know how to work, number one, in the weight room. If you talk to the weight room guys, Chris Carlisle was a good friend because of USC, and he was so proud. I'd go to clinics, and he would say out loud, you know, when I was in there about how proud he was of the Colton kids. But also that they know they have learning skills. They know how to learn, you know. They know how to study, because study skills, that's the number one problem that they have with kids coming in. And I think that's a big thing we can really help with as coaches. But we can't do it all. We got to go out and find. And I've been lucky enough to have, you know, these two guys that take it under their wing, and they love it, and they take it, and they our faculty has been sold. I mean, our parents are sold on it, our faculty sold on it. And it's just been running a full solid since we shared it to you guys, you know, way back in the day.
Yeah, and it helped those guys at Scotch Branch so much. You know, we started identifying them, and we got them on track. You know, before I got there, they hadn't had anybody to go to anybody's school because they weren't academically eligible. You know, you have your one or two. But, you know, by the time I left there, we had about 27 kids in college, you know. And
that's
that
awesome.
was unreal for that for that area.
I,
it works,
if anybody,
you know,
if anybody knows, if anybody knows that area, you are exactly right, Leonard. You did a great job when you putting that in there, and seeing those kids go to college was amazing. It was great. And that's what I think people got to understand.
You take it a classroom No, that's right. No, you take care of the classroom. Okay. I believe everything else is going to take care of itself. And I just believe that. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of questions on that, Harold.
That's all right. I don't mind. I'm like John. I spend three nights a week on the phone with coaches from all over the country. So.
Yeah, I know you're going to get some calls on that because that's a big issue right there. You know, that's until we start helping these kids in the classroom, it's not going to happen. You know, on the field in a big way that you want to. This is your third year at the schoolyard right now.
Yeah,
how's it going?
You know what? It's been a challenge. Obviously, we usually the first year when you don't have any seniors, they put you in a JV schedule. Well, we bit. I won't blame my daughter and the principal, but all the principals wanted to be in the same region. So we played a varsity schedule with mostly all sophomores and a few juniors, and none of the juniors had ever played football before. So, boy, we won one game, but we were in some games, and then we got hammered pretty well, too. And physically, we got beat up pretty good, too. But it was a challenge, and I think it got us ready for the next year. We won four games this year. We were in every single game. But the league we're in had the number one ranked team in the division and the number two ranked teams. And both years, our guys have been in the finals. So we've played the best, and we've missed the playoffs by the final game of the season both years. So we're getting right there, man. We've got our freshmen and our JVs both went undefeated this year and beat everybody, and we are excited about that. You know, the future's good. It's kind of one of those things where you just kind of watch it. And I really – you got to get everybody to buy in. And, you know, when we opened up our school, I think we had 13 different schools represented on our – and, you know, it's just part of life. It's tough bringing everybody together, but you got to get everybody to buy in. And I think we've had great – we have great parents. We have great kids. But you're starting to see the weights. You're starting to see all those kids that don't have – they've never lost to some of these teams that are known to be the powers. It'd be like we'd go to play Colton and people going to play Big Brother. Well, these other kids haven't lost to Colton yet. So then we won't feel that next year. You know, they may be better, but our psyche is going to be a whole lot better. So I'm excited for the new year and where we're headed. We've got some kids that are like the kids in the NFL. So it's our first bunch. We graduate our first seniors this year, but it's really those younger kids that have had the 2 years already now in our program and understand everything in our program and our philosophy, and they really believe, and you can just see it in size-wise in the weight room, and they're getting the true physicalness that we had, the physique that we had at Colton. And so you're going to see we're a year or two from being I've been telling coaches, you know, and recruiters, what you've been doing? And I told them I'm back, and we're trying to do it again, and we should have some kids ready to roll, and we do. We've got some kids that are going to be you should be seeing on Saturdays here pretty soon. So
you mentioned something that you said something at the end of that I think is very important. You know, the recruiters still come and see you, but the one thing you tell them, basically tell them, we don't have anybody yet.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You know, and they appreciate that. You know, a lot of times I laugh at some of my friends. They got a 5'2", 400-pound offensive guard they're trying to sell to South Carolina. Dude, that dude ain't going nowhere. You know, that's not going to work. You know,
I always use it as a great motivational tool. You know, you hit it right on the head. We got coaches all around us to do the same thing, and they appreciate it, man. You know, I always tell our kids, I said, when they're not working hard enough as we think in a weight room, we'll laugh, and I say, man, you think I'm going to mention your name to anybody that comes around? You're putting my whole reputation on the line here. And these guys,
exactly.
You know, you and I know we've talked to all these college guys, and every one of them appreciate you when they can call you and they know what you're telling them is the truth. And I think that's a huge thing for young coaches to know as well, is the fact that you're building relationships with all these guys recruiting. And there's so many schools now across the United States, they don't have time anymore like they did back in the old days to everybody stop by all the time. Sometimes it's a phone call, Harold, I'm going to be in your area. Do I need to stop by and talk to anybody? Or, hey, no, you know what, come by next year. I got a kid. Or you'll see him in the combine. You'll see him in different things. Or, you know, come on by and meet this young sophomore because you won't believe him. You know, you like to look at him. But I think it's really important to build those relationships because pretty soon they're going to stop calling you if you're not
That's
on.
That's right.
because you're wasting their time.
That's
they don't
right.
have that time. Yeah.
Exactly. So I hope everybody hears that, because that is so important coming, you know, because these guys, the recruiters are a little bit different than they were in the past. But, you know,
yes.
but guys, you want to build that relationship with them. That's the key. How did you become a winger, and why did you become a winger?
That one's a pretty easy one for me. It's interesting. You know, I was just a puppy when I started, but I was lucky to have Don Markham in my backyard, you know. And so as a coach, I saw he was winning. He was at Colton High School, believe it or not, then. And I saw he was winning, so I went and started spending all my practice time in there and watching what he was doing. He was running the stack eye then. So, but what do you love about that? I love what you were saying last week. What do you? They're attacking the power hole. But then they're going to find and then he found a way to put misdirection in it with his end around, and man, and he just did some different things. So as I started coaching, I was a Markham disciple. I'm still today gracious to him. Anybody who knows him, that really knows him, he will give you the shirt off his back to teach you everything about football he knows, if you're willing to listen long enough. And when he, honestly, it was 1984, he was at Ramona High School, and he installed the double wing. And now I had done some research, obviously, on wings and doing some different things, but we were pretty much, we would run a little wing and an eye backfield, and we'd do some things. But I started thinking about the wing in 84 when I saw Don putting the double wing in at Ramona High School, and that was the modern birth of the double wing in high school. You know, nobody was doing it yet. That was where it came out. And then, you know, we found out that Errol Persing, I think it was at Army way back in the day, he ran kind of a double wing, and I saw a film on that. And he was doing the same things. But the one thing that sold me was I wanted one of two things. When I started searching out the single wing and the double wing both, I wanted two things I think that can kill you in high school. Is a good power game right at the hole, but I like to be able to run a play at every single hole, so they have to cover every hole. I love misdirection, and I think when you're throwing play action pass and cross routes in high school are going to give people problems. Well, the one thing I found out with the wing over the years, and more as I got into the single wing, is you can freeze those linebackers in a hurry and set up your blocks for your linemen and give them an extra step on those backers. And it only takes you a couple plays at the beginning of the game to figure out if they're reading your guards or they're reading your backs. And then you can have some fun with them, you know, so especially if you match up physically. And that's what made it so fun. I tell you what, I love the fun of being able to run a play and watch the defense run the other way before they figure out the ball's on the other side of the field, you know. So that's one of my biggest things I love. But also it's set up, obviously I pass, depends on the quarterback. You know, when you have Brad Sorensen, who's with the Chargers now, I had to throw a little more, you know, and he was one of the greatest kids, never complained at all. But one thing I found out is if you have a good running game and you can freeze people, 90%, you and I know, 90, you were talking about last week with Dr. Ward, I've been blessed to have some quarterbacks that can throw the ball, but usually, you know, they're 60 or 70% because the receiver's wide open. If they just throw it up in the air within 10 yards, my guy's going to catch it and he's going to score. So so on good years, you know, we'd have 5,000, 6,000 yards, but we might have 1,500 yards with the 2,000 passing, and those were usually wide open yards, so...
Mm-hmm.
But I think I love the, you know, and that's when I started picking up the wing.
Okay. And you evolve into what I call the triple wing. Guys look at me kind of funny when I said it, but you incorporate the single wing, you incorporate the double wing, and you incorporate the wing T philosophies in there. How did you evolve to that?
Yeah, it wasn't real complicated as much as it sounds, and people look at my offense and a lot of people won't play us because they just don't want to prepare. Not that they're not going to beat us. They just don't want to prepare to take the time it takes. And we played some of the best when I had Alan Sharice in Division I out here in the modern days and Los Alamitos, those teams that were UC perennial ranked teams every year. But you know what? We were a base double wing team. We still are. I saw some things as I started meeting people, number one, you know, that influenced really influenced me. And I found out, and I'm one of those believers, you got to pay attention to detail. You got to be very, you got to practice everything, and you got to be able to practice everything. But I think the more you can make people have to practice for you for, they're going to have problems because they can't focus on any one thing. So that's really where my insight, I started getting a little crazy, but I started researching John Ulrich and Fritz Kreisler and Ken Kufel and Ed Raisley I got a hold of. I tell you, Ed was just an absolute, if you go to the symposium this year, I guess he's supposed to speak with the legends, but Ed is an absolute genius. You know, he has everything you can imagine that you're interested in. And he put me on to Dan Johnson, who put me on, you know how it folds, and put me on to this person, and everybody was willing to share. But I found things that I liked, and I've always been that kind of thing. You talked about going to clinics, man. I think you have to keep on learning as long as you're coaching. When you stop thinking you don't have to go to a place and learn anything else, you're in trouble. You're going to get beat. And so my whole philosophy, I guess, to say all those things is this. We run like 27 different formations, I think. You've seen them on paper when I present and stuff. But I want to be able to, and I can, attack every hole, and I can run every play out of every one of those formations. And my kids, once they learn the base formation of that, it really isn't hard. They know where they're supposed to be when the play is going. And so I can call a play almost sometimes that we've never run. But as long as they know the hole and they know the language where they're supposed to be, they'll run the play. And I think that's what kind of drives people nuts, you know. And so that's what sold me. I've just it's been good. The spinning, you know, some games, if I had, I think you asked this question last week, if I had two or three plays, it would be, you know, pitch. They got to stop pitch. And I love the old scissor, or we just call it reverse, but the old scissor play. A double reverse, and then play action, flood pass. You know, those three things I think could get you in the playoffs. But man, when you have to run all the other traps and all the other things, and I just think people think we're smash mouth football, and wing football is not smash mouth football. It's just double team, and let's put two bodies on one, and let's get sharp angles, and let's drive some people out of the hole by angle blocking. You know, and put another body. Why block one-on-one when we can block two-on-one wherever we can? So, and that's kind of our philosophy in a nutshell, but we want to do it. I want to do it, and this is what we've been able to accomplish, knock on wood, out of as many looks as I could give them. And then the last thing I put in, and obviously the most fun for us is, and I've presented, I think, once or twice on it, is our shift. And our shift, our kids have had a ball with, but it's usually good for about, you know, I always tell the referees, oh, no, we just always shift all the time. But really, we're looking to pull off sides. We, you know, if we can get them to pull off sides 5 to 10 times a game, that's 50 to 100 free yards. So works pretty good, you know.
I know when we put that in, it was hilarious. Sometimes when we got it, that I got it from you, you know, and yeah. I said we're going to do that. And our guys bought a hook, line, and sinker, man. And
kids love
good. It was good too.
Yeah, they feel ownership, you know.
And that's the key. This is ours. We're the only one who does it. By golly. We're gonna be good at this, right, and everything.
Yeah.
Another question. You can't do this by yourself, Harold.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you gotta have help. You gotta, and not just help, but you gotta have great help with you. And how do you build your staff? What do you look for? To me, I think you start with your offensive line, and I think you had a good one in Coach Rick. Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, Coach Rick.
When you see Rick again,
Leonard,
yeah,
you hit on
five. Tell him I gave him a shout out. Huh?
You already hit my pet peeve, probably one of my biggest pet peeves. I've got 38-page presentation, doctrine, if you want to call it, or whatever, that our coaches and kids have to learn before the season even starts. You know, they have to go through this presentation and what we're all about, yada, yada. But the bottom line is, nobody can do it themselves, and you got to surround yourself with the best people you possibly can. And I've been lucky enough to have great people around me my whole career. But at Colton, I think, was one of the most special groups that I ever had. And, you know, when I got to Colton, I was really lucky. I was born and raised here, and I was in Colton, Oregon. And, man, I always said if I sold my house, I probably would have never come down here. But God, in all his wisdom, knows he brought me down here, and it's been a great run, and still is, obviously. But one of the first guys I reeled in was my line coach. And you're right. If you got a great line coach, and I've been blessed with some of the best line coaches. One was my mentor as a high school guy and growing up, and then I had another one in Colton, Oregon, who was just, I mean, hook, line, and sinker. All those were his dogs, and that you couldn't. Boy, you're going to get hit if you say anything different. And then having Coach Rick, you know, Bray, and Coach Rick Bray, probably one of the best, if he wasn't the best of all of them, I think. And he buys into the philosophy. And the bottom line was, when I got to Colton, we had so many stipends, and I had a list of 26 coaches, a couple ex-pro guys, everybody was telling me, you need to talk to this guy, you need to talk to this guy. Well, I talked to a few guys, but I got a hold of Rick Bray and got a hold of my defensive coordinator, who was going to be, you know, Chris Milo, who's now the head coach at Colton, doing a great job. But I started nailing down these people one at a time, and we didn't even fill all our stipends the first year. We took seven. Because those seven guys believed in what I showed them. And if I didn't feel comfortable with talking to some of the guys I talked to, or that Rick and Chris or any of my other coaches that I'd already hired didn't feel comfortable because they knew of the guys, or they knew they've watched them coach, or we put them to the ring, you know. But number one, it wasn't about all X's and O's. We can teach the X's and O's to our coaches too. I was blessed to have coaches that had the X's and O's, but more blessed to have coaches that understood and believed that kids, what kids were about. And they were excited to coach again. Originally, when I got there, they thought they were done. They weren't going to coach anymore. They were a little like I said, Colton had been through a bad run. You know, Rick had been there when they went 0-10, and it wasn't good, you know, so... So when we sold out to the program, and I can't tell you the years we had were the best. We talk about it still, probably, you know, 10 of the best years at Colton High School together as coaching staff. We were like brothers. And, you know, you get to the point where you don't even have to start meeting over certain things because you just know everybody knows their place and they're doing it. And the second part of that, I think, Leonard, that a lot of people don't realize is longevity. You know, unless a coach is leaving to be another, take a step up, or I think the more you can keep your coaching staff together is probably the top thing. We were lucky to keep our coaches together the whole time, like 10 years at Colton. And even at Grand Terrace, been lucky enough to keep the base of my coaches all together, and their kids that played for me and their kids or coaches that have coached with me for the most part. And if they don't buy in, we keep going to that word, buy in, but, you know, you got to believe in what you're teaching and what you're preaching to the kids, and the kids have to see it and believe it. And all I know is my kids love my coaches. They may not love all the time what they're teaching because they're, you know, it's tough, and we push our kids pretty hard, but at the same time they know we love them. And I think that's the whole key. And when you talk about a Rick Bray line coach who is one of the best teachers of the kids, he was also one of the greatest coaches. He was like a dad to the kids, and I think that kind of summarizes what we try and preach. We're family together. You know, we're together probably more than you are with their own families, so we need to learn how to be a family together. So, and I've been blessed, but if you don't have good people around you, you hit it on the head, man, you can't get it done. It's absolutely impossible, and I think even today it's even worse. You have to really realize it in today's, as a football coach today, because it's more demanding with the technology and what we have than it ever has been.
I appreciate that you're saying that, because that's something I preach all the time, you know, and you don't have to have 1,000 around you.
But, no.
You know, you get those few guys who believe in what you're doing. You know, you will move mountains and everything. You simply would. What's your off season like, Harold?
Yeah, weights. Weights and grades. We don't give our kids much of a break. We give them finals off, you know, but at the end of the season, we'll give them a week off. If they're going to another sport, all they have to do is plan out a time where they'll be in the weight room to get their weights done. But you know, and I heard that John talking about, you know, the smaller the school makes it a little tougher, and there's no doubt on that. But we really believe in the weight room, and if you're, we believe in weights all year long. So obviously you lift just a little bit different than you do during the season than you do off, but we still believe in setting personal best during the seasons, and that's what keeps you from getting hurt. And we saw that at between our first year and second year of these young kids here at Grand Terrace. We had 18 we lost for the season the first year. Imagine losing 18 starters for the season. And this year we didn't lose near that, and next year I don't suspect hardly as many injuries at all. But it's that, and then number two, the classroom and community service. That's where we really push hard in the off season, is to do as many community service things as we can do. And that might be just, you know, what we do. We do that every before we pass out uniforms on Thursdays, we go out and we clean the campus for 30 minutes. Everybody has trash bags, and we're picking up the campus. So our kids on campus and our teachers on campus see the football team picking up trash. It's not beneath us to pick up trash, and it's not our trash. But we do that in the off season too. We do try and get all kinds of projects that we can. Anything community oriented. Get them down to the middle schools. Spend time with kids. Read with elementary kids. But we really push the community service and the weights. And then obviously classrooms, and we're trying to get a little of them some goal setting going as well, where we can get the kids one-on-one. I tell my coaches, we try and divide up the players, and everybody is to make contact with those players. And I stole that from De La Salle, Coach LaCour up there. Obviously, if you guys heard De La Salle up here in Northern California, that they never have the greatest players or the fastest players, but boy, they're like a machine. And they don't send a lot of players on, but they won 130 whatever games and set the national record, and they're still winning, playing in the bowl game every year, in the state bowl game. But they do a lot of goal setting, and they spend a lot of time. Their coaches spend a lot of time with their kids, and that's what we try and really get to know our kids. And okay, it's not about football, because football season is not in. All we are pushing them and caring is about they're getting their weightlifting regimen done. But everything else we're talking to them about is life, you know, and just how are they doing. If they're playing baseball, basketball, we're checking that out. We're going to their games. We're trying to be visible with them to know that we're not just interested in them as football players. We're interested in their limb and their lives. And I think that's the huge, probably the biggest point in the off season for coaches. You know, that's for the players. For coaches, it's good for us, obviously, that is. But the other part of it for us is looking at next season, trying to evaluate. And obviously, we lose the seniors, and who's going to go where. If we think we need to move players, that's when we're doing it, and we're getting it ready. So in spring, we're ready to go, getting ready for spring football and trying to talk that up and see where we're headed, if we're making any changes, and talk to players about that, what they think, you know, and those kind of things.
Do you do anything as far as developing the quote-unquote leaders on your team?
Do leaders
come up? How does that happen?
I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, I ran into – I think there's three things. Every coach, if you got a pen and pencil out there – there's three books that every coach ought to read, and I believe they're the only three books. But if you haven't read any books, these three books changed my coaching life all the way in. And it was funny. Some of them I didn't read for 20 years into my career, but it solidified what I'd believed and had been doing for so long and didn't even aware of it, you know, as I read it in this. And one is A Season of Life. It's a real famous book by Jeffrey Marks, and it was a Pulitzer Prize and has been a bestseller for years and years. And it talks about Joe Urban of the Baltimore Colts and life. And the second one is The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews. And it talks about basically how you ripple effect, you know, how one little thing affects, you know, you can have one person, every decision we make, we make choices every day that affect people that we'll never even know, and it'll blow you away if you read that. And it's just, these are little books. I read them in one night, and I hand them out to people, and I order them on used ones on Amazon, and I've been handing these things out over the last 5 years. And then Joe Urban, I don't know if you've heard of Joe Urban, again from the Baltimore Colts, one of the foremost speakers right now. He's done the ESPN opening football year, for the last 2 years, been the keynote speaker out of Baltimore. But he wrote a book called Inside Out Coaching, and it talks about how there's two kinds of coaches, transactional coach and transformational coach, coaches that transform lives and coaches that just coach football. And these three books just solidified and changed my career because they all talk about leadership. And I have my kids, you know, I preach all these to my kids, but we'll have meetings where we have the whole group in these meetings, and then I'll pick out five people or so, and we'll meet and talk about things. We would like to take them on, you know, especially our captains that we think of, guys that are in the running for our captains. We like to take them and do some separate things with them. But there's a manual out there, too, that's free. If anybody ever wants a copy of it, it was free to me, and it's well-written, and it has a lot of character lessons in it and leadership lessons. But I think that's, if not the foremost thing, if you look at my philosophy now, you know, ours has always been building champions for life. 36 years I've been doing this now. That's been my acronym, you know, that's been my saying. And we've added a few along the way and that I've been with. But the bottom line is we have to teach our kids how to be leaders, because society's not doing that anymore. You know, everybody's trying to suck them up. That's what gangs do. Gangs go out and try and make them part of the family and bring them in and then screw them up, you know. So we have to do the same thing. We have to get out there and we have to reel them in, and then we have to teach them. And so I just try and do a lot of leadership-type exercises with them, if you will, and I've got some videos and some different things, and we also there's some different things that you can do with the team, you know, that teach leadership. But you have to spend time talking about it, and I think that's the huge thing, teaching it, talking about it. And I think the community service really comes into that, because they get out there and they go, wow, people, like, we've adopted families at Christmas, families at Thanksgiving, and we take food to families where I have kids that have been living in cars, and they've said to me, Coach, I can't believe it. I thought I had it bad, and I didn't ever realize. I never had a clue. And it changes. I think when you start changing lives, leadership is easier to teach, but we still have to talk leadership. What is leadership about? What does it mean to be a man today? And I think if Inside Out Coaching, Joe Ehrman, that's what he all goes through the country today, teaching kids how to build relationships instead of being a macho guy, and build relationships and be a leader. You know, who's going to step out? Who's going to be different? And we challenge our – probably the biggest thing we do is we challenge our kids to be different. You know, take a mask off, number one. Number two, step out and be different. You know, I think you mentioned it on the website, but be real. You know, we've got these acronyms, be real, and it goes down. And it says some things, you know, respect all people, you know, and then the E is especially women. A, always do the right thing, and L, you know, live a life that matters. And I think live a life that matters, there's your leadership right there. You know, you got to do something that's a cause that's bigger than you. And, man, I take that right from Joe Ehrman and what leadership people are trying to teach our teachers and our kids today, both, you know. We got to be willing to step out and be different and not be the guy that rides the flow, you know, gets your ticket and jumps on the train and doesn't do anything. Who's going to step out and be different and have a cause that's bigger? So we have a lot of kids that are doing different things, because I don't dictate what leadership cause they take. I want them to find one. I said, if you can't find one, I'll find one for you, but get a cause. And that's kind of how we teach the base of our leadership. And then obviously we go into our philosophy and we challenge them. Can you do this? If you can't do this, then tell me right now, because I can't have you as a captain and lead our team. I said, you have to buy into this and you have to be willing. If your best friend breaks these things that we're talking about here, you got to be willing to speak up. You got to speak up to him, and he's either got to come to us or you got to come to us. Can you do that? And we challenge our kids. But we try and not just challenge our captains. We try and challenge the whole team that way. And it's tough. It's like you said, you don't get 100% buy-in. But you made also another statement, Lenny, we can't save them all. But I've had, I don't know how many kids I've had come back to me 15, 10, 15, 20 years later saying, and they were the ones that didn't buy in. But all of a sudden, they told me all about their what they did the last 10 years, and but they've changed and made the decision, man. And they're sharing with their kids exactly what we taught them, and we always have a good smile and hug over that, you know. But and then the other thing we do that's out there that I, you know what, it was, we teach them. And I don't want to keep rattling here, but you know, it's about love.
Oh, you keep on going, man.
Yeah.
This is important.
This is about love, and we got this right straight from Joe Irwin. We teach our kids that their only job is to love each other, and our job as coaches is to love them, and that's what it's all about. That came from Joe Irwin and being a real man. And I always tell them, you know, love doesn't mean lovey-dovey, we're all going to hug you all the time. That's not what it is. Love is, are you willing to stand up? Are you willing to do the things you need to do in the classroom so your brother on the field doesn't have to worry about you not making grades? Are you willing to step out and be different, have a matter, have a cause? You know, it covers all those areas. Are you willing to step out when somebody bullies somebody else at school? You know, there's so many causes out there that we can, people who, you know, we have a great relationship with our special ed department because, man, so many, you partner up and those are some of the greatest kids ever, and they'll come out and be a part of your program. And it's, you know, just one thing after another. We can go down the line. There's so many causes, but you can go on our campus and people are blown away by, I can't tell you how many times a day that I have players come up and chest bump me or give me a hug and say, I love you, coach. And I say, hey, I love you too, brother. And all it is, man, it's recognizing that we're on the same page. And, it's pretty special, you know, and I think that's, too many coaches are missing that. You know, it's not a macho thing. It's about doing the right thing. And I think that's, if you can get that kind of connection, that leadership, you're going to get that leadership that you're looking for in the field. So, and it's a challenge. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. We know that, but but I can tell you it's not an uncommon thing at all on our campus for our coaches and our kids to be taught, you know, saying I love you to each other. And boy, what that means to an administrator and to other people, they love it, you know, and it rubs off.
What was the name of that first book you mentioned?
Yeah, first book is Season of Life by Jeffrey Marks.
Season of Life?
Yeah, like season of football season, Season of Life. And it's
you can
about
get all,
football.
I have Inside Out. You can get the other two on Amazon?
You can get the other two, I get them, Joe, I mean, I buy... They're $19 if you buy them new on Joe Irwin's site and on Amazon, but you can get them. I get them sometimes for $2 and $1, and the shipping's more than what it costs me, but I hand them out, and people, coaches are just taken by, they read them, they can't put them down. They read it one night. It's a great book, and I was told this, but I got this, The Butterfly Effect by Andy Andrews, and it comes with a CD, so when you order it, you want to make sure it has the CD with it. Because the CD is amazing, will change your life, you know. And basically, the whole thing about it is, and you talk about making a difference with my kids. Last year, on our helmets, we had a R.E.D. It was a red sticker that said R.E.D., and it was Ripple Every Day. And the basic philosophy on the whole book is, it goes to say that a butterfly can flap its wings, and the molecules that it moves by flapping its wings, by the time it reaches all the way across the other side of the world, can start a hurricane or a typhoon. And then he gives examples of people who have made decisions, and you will be blown away, all the way back to the Civil War and how we ended up where we are today, and how one person influenced 2 billion people and never even knew it, you know. And so every decision we make is going to influence somebody for the good or for the bad. And that's the premise of this little book. But get the CD, because Andy Andrews is on the CD, and you can actually YouTube him and see it, Butterfly Effect or Andy Andrews, and have him go through the Butterfly Effect and watch it. Amazing, amazing. It will change your life as a coach, and you've already got the other one. But, yeah, you can get them on Amazon. You can get them used cheap. But make sure you get the CD with the middle one, the Butterfly Effect.
Okay. All right. And I hope everybody's listening. I was taking notes as you were talking, man.
No problem.
You got my butt burning right now.
That's what I always love. It. It's a good thing. That's what wingers are about, man. Sharing. I'm telling you. I was excited.
People don't understand that, man. You make me. You know, as my aunt used to say to my my uncle, you know, told him, you make my liver quiver, you know. And,
you got it, brother.
Yeah.
I start shaking before I even get on the plane to go to these things, you know, to these wing symposiums and through, you know.
Yeah. Let me ask you a football question there. You know, I was looking at one of your tapes, and I saw this big sheet hanging around your neck. And I said, God, his police sheet is bigger than a doggone big screen TV. How do you game plan?
I know everybody looks at that. And my kids even at practice go, do we really run that many plays? And I go, yeah, I think it's something like 670 or something like that. I always tell the referees, it's funny, John Gruden's the only one I know that can compete with me on the longest play calls. But the referees laugh, and they'll be on my sideline, and they'll say, not to divert, but they'll say, is he really going to remember that? And I said, my kids, don't tell me they can't learn geometry and trig, because they can remember that play, I guarantee it. But it is, you know what? Premise, I do these things, and here, you know, I hope none of my coaches out there, but most of them know me, you know, anyway, and I've been doing it for so long and playing against them, but I come out and I look for four things. I try and set up, I don't script, I usually set up 4, 5 to 6 plays at the beginning of the game, and all I do is give them 6 different formations and run. I might run the same play out of 6 different formations and to either side, but all I want to do is see what they're doing defensively, and then I go from there. So that narrows down my play sheet for the week. Through film, you know, just like everybody else, through film, and I'm looking for situations, and I'm looking, I've already put down. And what I do is I have listed all my plays, and most of my sheets are by formation and or by all screens, all play action, short, long, middle passes, and those kind of things, box, you know, span. And I'll put them by formation so I know. But then I can highlight things as we go, and I can do that on the field because I have it in laminated, or I can do it at practice, things that I think are going to work better. But what I do is, and you'll see this on film, we're in a playoff with a team that's 14-0, actually in the semis, and this team is a very good team today even, they are running, and I said, watch this, guys. And I said it over the deal early because, they were flying around all over. They're a good team. And we lost by a point to them twice, and they won the CF State Championship. But we got them 3 years in a row, and their coach was just having a fit, and I was having a fit because they're good. But I noticed that they were reading our guards, so we ran sweep right. With motion with sweep, kind of a jet sweep, but we ran some misdirection, and we pulled our guards to the opposite way, and their whole team chased the guards, and we ran for a touchdown down the sideline down the right side, you know, and it's just things like that. But my play sheet is kind of like I try and think 3 plays ahead, so it's like my coaches will give they're the funniest guys. They say, I don't know why you wear a headset because you're not listening to us. And I said, well, I am, but I'm kind of thinking of something else, you know. So I said, if you really want me, you got to yell in the headset, you know, because I'm thinking ahead and I try and just set people up. And I think that's what you have to do. And that's why I think offensively, and we're as wingers, we think offense more than defense. You know, we got to play great defense, but the bottom line is, when we're talking, you know, offense, you have to be able to set your plays up. And I think sometimes coaches want to call a lot of different plays, but they don't set them up. And it's your offense is an offense because this sets up this and this sets up this. How many times do you run that pitch and all of a sudden you run that scissor play and that scissor play goes to, you know? And I remember one time running 6 pitch plays in ten switch plays on the same side to the same hole, and they weren't stopping it. And Rick Bray, my line coach, comes over the headset and goes, Coach, can you do me a big favor? And I said, what, Rick? And he goes, at least run that to the other side. So, you know, it's you have your arsenal. Part of it, I'm getting old too. It's got to remind me. But when I'm looking for something, I want to be able to find it, and I want to be able to call it, because I do have. You probably remember I have quite a bit of verbiage sometimes,
mm-hmm.
and so I like it in front of me, so I can when I tell my quarterback, I'm not. I can spit it out, and I don't, you know, stumble over it. And so it's loaded. It is a big one. Yeah, I mean, you've seen it. It's loaded with plays. But and then it also has our 2-minute no huddle stuff. We actually went, you know, some to the no huddle stuff last year to control tempo, and that was interesting for us and too. So that's something new I've been doing the last couple of years with Oregon influence. I have three up at Oregon. And so I've got an influence up there. So.
My goodness, Howard, you got people all over the place, I tell you. But that's what happens when you run a very good program. You know, people, you develop kids, and they're going to do great things in life. One last question before we have to shut it down. And I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. That's fine. I was just going to say.
One last question
before
we shut it.
Yeah, there you go.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, one of the things with clinics, the other important thing is it's like we developed friendship with the Oregon coaches. You can go anywhere. Any college group will invite you to go to their place. They love to have you on campus. So don't be afraid to take your staff and go and spend time in practice with and other teams. I have teams come into my practice, high school teams come into my practice, and they watch my practice, you know, and especially in the off season. And I think that's important to see. And you get to check yourself. So anyway, just a side point. Sorry about that, Leonard.
Yeah, well, I think we all got to get from the idea that we hung the moon, as someone used to say all the time. This stuff was around long before we came about.
No kidding, huh? I never tried to reinvent the wheel, brother.
One last question, and it's going to be multiple parts, but you know you answered this one.
Okay.
We've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing this for a little over 40 years, and you say you've got 36 years in, something like that?
Yeah.
Why do you keep doing this, Harold? What is your burn? What keeps you getting up every day to go do the stupid stuff that we do every day?
I tell you what, Leonard, it's one thing. You know what? We have an opportunity to change lives. Football was good to me. So were some of the other sports. You know, I had a coach that mentored me. He was my wrestling coach, and he was a football coach as well. He wasn't my football coach, but he was my wrestling coach. To this day, we stay in touch with my high school football coach and him, and are super close. And you know, I was so impressed. I would give them really high credit. I was kind of a goofball. I enjoyed messing around a lot. Nothing to really hurt anybody, but they kept me out of trouble, and they taught me how to be a leader and a person, and made a difference in my life. And I think the bottom line is, you know, I watch kids, and I think kids keep you young. Number one, they keep you young. You kind of know the lingo. You're kind of around. And even though your body's aging, boy, you're kind of in the loop, you know. But your example in this world, you know, it's like I said, having a bigger cause than yourself. You know, I'm just this one minute person, and if I can do anything at all to help another individual do something well in his life or see them succeed at something that they thought they could never do, man, the transformation of that person's life or to watch the success in that person's life or to see the smile on their face or to see the special ed kid that I remember being in this is probably one of the highlights of my career in all the years. I'm sitting in an IEP. If you've ever been in the IEPs, and they're always writing these goals for these kids. And I had a severe SDC kid, severely slow, and they were writing all these goals, and they look at me, Coach Strauss, what about you? And I'm looking at it, I'm just shaking my head because they're giving them these goals that they're going to make easy, you know, no problem. And I said, you know what? I think I got a good goal for this kid. I'm going to make sure he dresses out, he practices, and he plays in a game. And they all whipped their heads around like at me. I was crazy. And I said, and I kind of looked at myself, and I kind of went, uh-oh. Did I step in my mouth? You know, I put my foot in my mouth. But guess what? Next season, he not only played, he got a couple yards, and then he got hit, and I thought I was going to lose my job forever. But then after the game, he got his picture with the cheerleaders, took his helmet off, and all the cheerleaders came up and rounded him up and got their picture. And then he said, "Coach, I want to be the water boy again because this helmet hurts." But he met his goal. And he moved to Texas. The best part is yet to come. He moved to Texas. His family moved, and he was still going to had a year or two of high school. And he calls me to this day on my cell phone to say, "Hi, Coach, how you doing? And you still coaching? And, you know, I got a hip surgery coming up next week, putting a new hip on the other side, and I got one already in on the other side from a couple years ago. They want to do something to my back. But, you know, I hope that God never take away football from me, or coaching, I should say, from me, because, you know, we'll always have the memories. And I know that day is going to come, obviously. But even when I, you know, Lord help me, then let me help a coach, let me help somebody learn something, or let me share something that went on in my life or that I think I can help them with, that people help me with. Everybody, and that's why I think single wing coaches are so great, because you can go to any other clinic and you can pay your hundreds of dollars. You know, I pay our $500 for our coaching staff to go to the Glazer clinics, but every one of them ought to be at the conclave, because they're going to get the shirt off their back. You know, literally, we come back with shirts from other schools. We come back with tapes. We come back. I'll give the book, the Bible. John Ward will give the Bible, his coaching Bible, to anybody who will ask and want to stop and listen. We've spent the night through the nights together and sharing. And that's why these guys, these young guys you're talking to, I keep shaking my head. Hear him. He's preaching. That's gospel, because it's true. And that's the same thing with coaching. I coach because, you know, how many opportunities am I going to have until the day's gone when I can't, you know, be there, out there limping? Last year I spent limping most of the time with my hip and back. But I tell you what, being able to say something that might change a kid's life, and that's what it's all about, brother. I think as coaches, we don't realize we have the power. And I'll finish with this short story if I got time.
You got
time. There's a coach who was also coached for several years, and this is back in the day. This is way back when Billy Graham, probably the most respected gospel evangelist in the world, with presidents and everybody else in the United States and the world. He got his went to seminary and got his preaching license. And he went to Billy Graham, and he was torn. I heard this in a clinic one time. And he said, this is a true story, and he couldn't figure it out. It was just inside tearing him up, whether he should give up coaching or whether he should start preaching. And so he asked Billy Graham. He went to Billy Graham, and he said, Billy, he was good friends with Billy Graham, and he said, Billy, if I have the opportunity to coach and I have the opportunity to preach, which would you think I should do? And he said, if you want to have the opportunity to affect the most lives that you possibly can, then you need to be a coach. And that coach, that football coach, as a matter of fact, football coach went the rest of his life and was a football coach changing lives. And if the best preacher, and I think one of the best, if not the best preacher ever in history, tells you that, and I've heard it over and over, we have the opportunity to affect more lives than any other occupation ever. So we also got to be careful with that, because if we screw that up, we're also going to be held accountable for that. That's the gospel. And so I take that seriously. I think bottom line is, as long as I can coach, I'm going to do it. And when it's time, then hopefully I can help somebody else coach, or I can help somebody else with knowledge. Just like guys like Ed Raceley. I mean, you can name them one after the other, that are retired now, but they're still helping. They're still going to clinics. They're still talking. They're still showing up, and they're still staying up with you if they can, you know, to talk football with you. So that's it in a nutshell, I hope, brother.
Well, Harold, I sure appreciate it, man. I tell you, my butt's been burning all night.
I love talking to you. You know that, Leonard. It's Coach Johnson is one of the best, and this, what you got going, is awesome. Another opportunity to share, where coaches can share and understand This is what it's about. It's about giving back and giving to each other, making each other better, because that's what we're all about. This Wing thing is it's a fraternity. So.
Yeah, you know, I got so much from it. You know, when I first got started, I remember Myrtle Beach. I remember Missouri, and those guys just shared everything with me, man. And sometimes I just come to tears just thinking that those guys saved my coaching career.
Yeah.
And the
yeah.
best thing I can do is something like this, you know, just let's put it out here and let's let everybody hear it, you know. Well, Harold,
yeah.
I must bid you good night.
Hey, God bless, Leonard. And
I really appreciate it, man.
had
okay,
a ball.
Take care,
it was
okay?
great. You, all right,
okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, man. Bye-bye. Well, everybody, that concludes us tonight. Wow. That was good. And I hope that you tune in again. I hope you download this and listen to it over and over again, because a lot of things that Harold said tonight, we can take and we can just take it for truth. Next week, we'll have the infamous Corey Parker from Michigan, from River Rouge High School. Dynamic young guy, and I promise you, you're not going to be disappointed. Until next week. Same time, same bat station. I want everybody a good night and happy Easter to everybody. And take somebody tonight and tell them you love them. Y'all have a good weekend. Talk at you later.
I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. Much more than I never knew, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself.